I am just trolling.
From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Hey, get out of here.
That's what you're calling.
Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. I'm your host, Shahan Ahmed, here in Playa Vista with Alex Baker.
Sorry, just enjoying a little taste of my berry, unnamed, unbranded, carbonated water drink that's delicious.
Tastes like every other flavor. And Joey Galino.
You're just trying to sow further division in the FC Yahoo crew with your drink choices, aren't you?
There is no division here. We all enjoy the beautiful game. And speaking of the beautiful game, there were some beautiful matchups this week. In the Champions League in particular, we are recording on Wednesday. We just wrapped up a heck of a busy day today in the group stages. We had Chelsea come back late and win over Atletico Madrid, which it was in Madrid at the new stadium for Atleti. And then the real, real stunner, and I think the place that we should start, is PSG 3-0 Bayern Munich. Let's start with you, Alex. What happened to Bayern?
You know, this is not totally out of the blue, because we've seen Bayern with some not great results this season. Losing to Hoffenheim, drawing on the weekend to Werder Bremen. But I think what's surprising is just how easy PSG made it look, and the way that the Bayern dominated possession and dominated shots on goal and dominated shots and basically dominated every statistic but the one that counts, which is goals.
Yeah, let me take a step back.
Sure.
And it was the second minute when Neymar just up the left side pretty much dribbles through the entire Bayern Munich defense.
No resistance.
Yeah.
Gets to essentially the top of the box and then lays it off for Dani Alves, and Alves finishes coming up the right side. It was a statement goal for me. And then, you know, the second goal was a beauty by Edinson Cavani, and then Neymar ends up, you know, cleaning up for the third in the second half. But those first two goals, you know, the Cavani goal came about just past the half-hour mark, but the Alves goal in particular, it was one of those goals where you're sitting there going, wow, Neymar just made Bayern Munich look like, frankly,
Mets.
I was going to name a random...
Sorry, Mets fans, if you're out there.
I was going to name a random La Liga team, but it's, you know, you have to remember, no, he plays in Ligue 1, and it really did seem like it was just a regular old week in France. Joey, is PSG a level and a notch above Bayern? Is it just clear as day now?
I think they are. I think there's a couple caveats that you have to throw into this match. First of all, the decision by Carlo Ancelotti to leave Mats Hummels, Frank Ribery, Arjen Robben on the bench, and only bring Robben on late and the other two not at all, was a bit puzzling, because you definitely want to develop your young talent. There was definitely still more than enough guys on the pitch to be competitive in the match, especially more competitive than they were. But, you know, for the first big away trip like that in the Champions League, the first big challenge, you'd say, of this campaign for them, you'd kind of think that you'd want at least a couple of those more experienced guys in there. And that's kind of what this was for both teams, was the first big challenge that they faced, because Bayern and PSG can roll through their leagues all they want, and we'll be impressed, but we'll also say, well, that's not really their goal necessarily. This is the first time they were exposed to some fellow top-level competition, and you have to say that PSG looked a lot better. They looked a lot more incisive. It looked like Bayern was lost. They didn't really know how they wanted to play. And it was very convincing, and I think we all kind of suspected that PSG was a better side this year, maybe a notch above than Bayern, but I don't know if any one of us expected it to be this convincing, because 3-0 was actually kind of a complimentary score line for a match like this. They could have won by more.
Well, I will say I guess I'm the exception in this, because coming to this after everything happened, but coming into the Champions League, I had PSG pegged as the top challenger, the number two team behind Real Madrid. You give Real Madrid the ceremonial, you're the champion, you're number one until somebody beats you. But in my opinion, I think, you know, at some point, I think injuries are going to catch up to Real. And if you asked me who I think is going to win the Champions League this year, I would have said, and did say publicly, PSG was my pick. because I do think that when you look at their squad, it is so darn good. And Neymar really is at the height of his powers right now. He's arguably the best player on the planet. And we saw it.
Yeah, I think what we also saw today is that, you know, him and Cavani don't need to be besties in order to destroy other
teams.
They
are not besties.
No, but you know what? They can still go out there together, and with Mbappe and the supporting cast, they just dismantled Bayern Munich, who, you know, for all their possession, to me, never really looked like scoring. And I predicted PSG would win this game, but I certainly thought Bayern would manage an away goal, you know, at least to
you'd
come
think.
Out of it with something. Yeah, you'd think Bayern Munich could go and score a goal.
Especially with
the Parc des Princes.
Lewandowski through the middle, and then Müller and James Rodriguez on either side of him. Like, that's – you'd think that would be enough to score. But
sure.
It wasn't against this PSG team, and I think it's more of a complete team than it's been in the past. And I think also one thing that – I don't know if this was really a huge talking point with PSG even after, you know, the takeover and they were infused with cash. The squad depth you never really felt like was overly there, and partly because you didn't need a lot of depth to win Ligue 1. But now that they've got it, like today they kept out, like, Julian Draxler came on late. They kept him out of the side. Angel Di Maria was kept out of the side until late. Lucas Moura didn't play at all. Like, you look at their bench, and their bench now is a little more filled out. Thomas Meunier is on that bench as well. And so you get the sense that this team is robust enough with talent and options and ability to play certain ways that I think there's even a level that they could go to where if they can't dictate the terms with that fearsome attacking front three, then they can play a bunch of different ways, and they haven't even been challenged in that way yet. So again, you know, this was a scary good performance on their part.
Yeah, they weren't even really challenged today, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joey brings up a good point in terms of depth, but Di Maria, Draxler, those guys can't get in the team
now.
They're
in the team.
And those are world class players. Julian Draxler was a huge buy for them last year. We're not talking 10 years, 5 years, literally last year. But when you look at it, you're like Cavani, Mbappe, Neymar, where do you fit those guys in? You can't. And it does speak to the depth, because even if one of those guys was to be out injured, suspended, what have you, they got guys that can slot in very, very, very easily.
Very easily. And I would like to also just say about to Bayern Munich's on their behalf, you know, they've started pretty well in the Bundesliga. However, they've also lost a match already. They blew that 2-goal lead over the weekend, or I think last Friday, against Wolfsburg. So they dropped some more points there. It hasn't been an entirely convincing start for them. I think we all agree that they're going to end up winning the league. Maybe Borussia Dortmund challenges them a little more than they have in recent seasons, but I think we all agree they're going to win the league. However, you know, there was kind of that – you were a little suspect about them, and then when they go into a match and they play like this, I feel like it kind of confirms a lot of people's worries about this side, and they don't really know where they are. They've got a lot of talent, but they don't really know where they are in their transition. They're trying to phase out the older guard and bring in the younger guard, and it doesn't seem like the younger guard's on the same page quite yet.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Going into this match, there's a lot of talk about what's going wrong at PSG, Neymar and Cavani in this spat, a lot of the players siding with Cavani and Dani Alves and Neymar, sort of their own little clique. They seem to have sorted it out, and now I think people are going to be more inclined to ask questions about Bayern. I don't think that in the season and, what are we, a third or season and a quarter that we've seen under Ancelotti, they've not been that convincing. You know, they're certainly nobody's favorite to win the Champions League. They're a default's favorite to win the Bundesliga, of course, always. But, you know, you've got Lewandowski making those comments. You've got this team getting a little bit older. And it could be one of those situations where we maybe do see them not win the Bundesliga. We see Bayern go through one of these, like, periodic lulls,
right,
which they do every now and then. They went through one at the beginning of the decade.
Yeah, let's not forget that this five Bundesliga title in a row streak they're on had never been done before. It had only been 3 years in a row. So while they have been the greatest club in the history of German football, you're right, they do have kind of lulls here and there where other teams can kind of rise up and catch them. And I just think that, you know, last year they got kind of a crap draw in the Champions League. I think they've played, Real Madrid in the quarterfinals. So maybe them not making the semifinals wasn't an overly, you know, certain statement about where they stand. But yeah, right now, I mean, the table doesn't lie. They're 3 points behind Borussia Dortmund. They're third. Which for them, you know, we're used to seeing them lead wire to wire and not really be challenged. So I think there's tangible evidence that they're a little bit weaker this year.
2 points. First, would you guys give up €1 million to give up your penalty duties?
I will give. I'll take all. Yes, yes. PSG board, if you're listening, I will give up penalty duties on Sunday morning pickup going forward.
Yes,
for a fraction of that.
I think it's hard to turn that down.
Give me $500. I'll give up penalty duties on Sunday.
Whoa! We're negotiating here. Okay, don't play your hand.
Well, and then second, I just think it's time to move on from this match. But the match that we've been referencing, not directly, but the teams we've been talking about are Dortmund and Real Madrid. And yesterday, those two teams met in a match where Ronaldo had a couple goals. Real Madrid won 3-1. But early on, there was a controversial decision where Sergio Ramos slapped the ball essentially out of the goal, right on the goal line. So at this point, he could have been given a red card and a penalty kick. Could have been a completely different story. Christian Pulisic did not start, barely featured at all in this match. 3-1 was
lost.
3-1 was the final score.
Conclusions out there.
Correlation.
Only in this room. Actually, no, probably anywhere
only
in America.
Only on this side of the table. Yeah.
In case you guys don't know, Joey is a massive Christian Pulisic stan. It's not even a fan. He's a stan.
For sure.
Yeah. He's making tapes and driving off a cliff right now. In any case, I'm going too far down that thought.
He's a Pulisic Easter.
Yes, sure.
Can we coin that? Is that a thing?
It is now. But, getting back to the actual match, it was a fun match, but Dortmund just kind of seemed a little bit open because they were playing a high line. The other thing, you know, the announcer was doing this, but it's something that I've noticed a long time ago. I just don't think that Sokratis is nearly at the same level that they had when they had the Subotic, Mats Hummels partnership. I think Toprak is pretty good. I actually do like him. I've liked him over the years. But is it, you know, Dortmund is much better going forward. I'm not at all convinced about them in the back. And when they were winning those titles in the Bundesliga, their defense was a huge portion of why they were able to win those titles. So between Real Madrid, who looked great because that's what they do in the Champions League, even when they're not necessarily looking great in La Liga, and one last mention before I turn it over to you guys, that first-time goal by Gareth Bale. Oof. Oh, man. Danny Carvajal, by the way, arguably the best right back in the world right now. Before that, just moments before, had this amazing run where he really should have scored it, but he had the chance. He took the shot. You saw Ronaldo and Bale at the, on the back post going, "Why did you shoot it?" Then a few minutes later, Carvajal puts in this beautiful ball from three quarters down the field. Gareth Bale, no touch, nothing, just perfectly slots it past the goalkeeper, roof of the net, back of the net. It was a beautiful, beautiful quality goal. Between Dortmund and Real Madrid, what did we learn yesterday, Joey?
I think that the match, the way it played out for me, Dortmund has to feel a little aggrieved, like slightly, from these first couple matches. You could argue one of the Tottenham goals was offside. The Sergio Ramos incident yesterday, you always say it, it's the corollary or the binary, Alex, the goal, late goal or red card, and that looked
barely
like a red
goal
card.
But
the thing is, like, even if Real Madrid had gone down to 10 men, even if Dortmund gets that penalty call, and let's say they score the goal, this is like, we know, you kind of know what you're watching after a certain point in the Champions League because these are the best teams and players in the world. And the Real Madrid goals were such incredible pieces of skill and so well worked, both team-wise and individually, that you kind of felt even down to 10 men, Real Madrid was going to get something out of this game. Because Dortmund, well, the way they lined up, Shahan, you kind of alluded to this, like they didn't really know how they wanted to attack Real Madrid. And I think part of it is because this Real Madrid side has been kind of in flux so far this season. You know, Ronaldo's been out of La Liga with his suspension from the Spanish Super Cup. Marcelo and Sergio Ramos have gotten red cards. So it's kind of like you do have a lot of information of how they like to play for the past couple of years, but the recent evidence isn't quite there for the training ground. So, you know, they seem a little unsure of themselves in their approach to the match. And again, just there's so much talent in this Real Madrid side. The piece of skill from Bale, it doesn't matter how many men are on the field. As long as there's two, whoever plays it to him and then him finishing it off, off, that's going to be a goal. And as long as Ronaldo's on the pitch, you just see these overpowering runs that he makes, whether he's on the ball or not. It just, you know, I think that we learned, if we didn't already know, that Real Madrid's still the best team in Europe, especially in the Champions League. And, you know, Borussia Dortmund, this is what happens when you're a club that doesn't spend massive amounts of money. You've got to kind of cycle in guys defensively, offensively. I think there was enough in the attack to get more out of it than they did. However, you know, I think that they're a notch below, and I think that was made apparent yesterday.
Just one thing I want to add. It was Cristiano Ronaldo's 400th match for Real Madrid. That's 411 goals in 400 matches for everybody keeping count. In the Champions League, 94 goals in 90 matches. La Liga, 285 goals in 267. This guy is just a different level. It's a different – you can't really even put it into proper words to do it justice. But from 2009 until the present, 411 goals in 400 matches for Real Madrid. At the highest level, he performs, you know, Champions Leagues – anything and everything.
Yeah, which is it's absurd. I was watching a Premier League game this weekend, and I can't remember which one, but the announcers alluded to, oh, this has been a good striker for this club. You know, he scores once every like 180 minutes statistically. And then I heard, you know, the Cristiano Ronaldo stat yesterday, and I immediately thought of that, probably because it was so fresh in my mind. And I'm like, yeah, how do you like scoring better than every 90 minutes? That's just incredible.
Yeah, I think for Dortmund, look, they weren't really expected to beat Real. I mean, I know last season they had two draws with them, but despite
this
Real Madrid's,
is Madrid's first win at the Westfalenstadion, if I'm not mistaken, ever in their history. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. So maybe you were expecting them to do a little better, but you know they haven't really been showing it in La Liga, but they are still the best team in Europe, and this is a good Dortmund team. This is a Dortmund team that's just been blowing teams out in Germany. 5-0 against Cologne, 6-1 against Gladbach, 3-0 against Hamburg. But I also think this is a coach who's still kind of learning his way at the highest level. I mean, he had a good run in the Europa League last year with Ajax and got to a final and then kind of found himself in over his head against Manchester United. And I think that there's been a bit of a learning curve. And they're doing worse than people thought they would. I mean, they've got two games and no points, and they could be in trouble in the Champions League pretty quickly here.
Yeah, I actually called it the Battle of the Bald Men because it was Bosch and Zidane.
Very, I see what you did there.
Very, very, yes. Very, very slick bald heads. I think the Champions League has been a challenge for Dortmund, and it's one of those things where when you watch them, they weren't really that bad. But like we alluded to earlier, I think, you know, Dortmund is very good at holding the ball, at creating chances, but the way that Real Madrid was springing out those attacks and the pace that they have on the counter, I mean, that is the best counter in football, period. You know, you just can't compete with it. It's won back-to-back Champions Leagues. And the Real Madrid team, you know, Joey said they've been in and out, in flux. The only regular starter missing for them was Marcelo. Everybody else was there. Every single, and Sergio Ramos, apart from that red cardable play, was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He was tremendous. Yeah, you know, he kept Aubameyang completely under wraps. It was one of those performances that reminded you yet again, these guys could win the Champions League for this year and maybe next year. Who knows? But they really are that good.
I just think to tie it all together, when you look at what this match might implicate for the rest of the season. Obviously, Real Madrid, we all expect them to be there in the end, and probably we pick them to win the Champions League. La Liga, on the other hand, they won it last year. Recently, they haven't been as big about winning it. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't stick in their craw or whatever when, like, Barcelona wins it or Atleti wins it, but as long as they win Europe, it seems like they're okay over Real Madrid. On the other hand, you mentioned Borussia Dortmund's poor start to the Champions League campaign. If Dortmund ends up going out after the group stage, which right now, let's face it, they're 6 points behind the joint leaders at the top of the group, so it's going to be a fight to get back up there. All of a sudden, you're talking about slotting back down into the Europa League, and then from there, that's a question like, well, do you even want to win that competition? So then you think about them putting all their emphasis on the Bundesliga where they're already 3 points up and they're already playing very well and in good form, and maybe there's a changing of the guard in the Bundesliga at the top this year. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I could see that. They're certainly not going to win the Champions League. Whether they continue to progress in it remains to be seen. But going back to Real Madrid, guys, is there an argument to make that this is the greatest Real Madrid side ever?
I wrote that actually after last year's Champions League. I'm like, I'm sorry. I apologize to Ferenc Puskas and Alfredo Di Stefano and all the great Real Madrid players of the late 50s and early 60s and the Hugo Sanchez sides of the late 80s that won like five straight La Ligas. This is the golden age of Real Madrid. I'm sorry. The game is more competitive than ever. More teams have access to that kind of elite infrastructure ever. You don't want to get too much into politics, but obviously the regime back in the 50s and 60s kind of tilted things into a favorable imbalance for Real Madrid. This is just – they have arguably the greatest player of all time. They've got a ton of the greatest players of their generations. Everyone is an international. Everyone is a first-choice international basically. And they fit so well together, and they have the perfect manager to manage these egos. And the sky is the limit for this team. We're talking about them winning maybe three or four Champions League titles in a row when the game has been as competitive as ever. I think this is the golden age. This is the best Real Madrid team we could ever see.
So the first team, just for reference, won the first five European Cups, mm-hmm. which turned into the Champions League. So, you know, the argument could be made that this team still has a little ways to go. But yeah, I tend to agree with Joey that I think that I won't say the greatest team. I'll just say the greatest Real Madrid side that has probably ever existed. And when you really think about it, where they are in terms of their transition and going forward, you know, we're talking about winning back-to-back. Well, there's only a gap before they won one before that. So it's 3 and 4 years in terms of how many they've won in the Champions League. So, yes, I know, you know, Barcelona was in between there and they did a treble in the middle. The only thing really lacking for this Real Madrid side would be to do a treble. But, you know, the team of the 50s never did a treble. Mm-hmm. They never pulled that off. They were never able to get it together on all the fronts. They just dominated in Europe. So I do think that there's the possibility that – or actually, I think the probability that we're watching the greatest Real Madrid team ever.
I would agree. Because I think the competition that those guys won back in the 50s, it was a different – it wasn't the same sort of thing. It wasn't as competitive. It wasn't even really officially sanctioned as the European Championship in the same way it is now, the structure and all that. So
Pele famously never played in Europe.
Well, European players pretty much dominated. It wasn't –
it was.
It was pretty much just European players.
Right,
that's
right.
What's different. This is a global sport now. And,
yeah.
And they do – you do come over from South America – there used to be limits on how many non-European players you could even have on your roster. And, you know, there are certain limits still in place, but not the way that they were back then. So it's a whole different ballgame.
I think it's almost without a doubt that this is the greatest Real Madrid team of all time. And if they win another Champions League or two on the bounce, then we're going to have a broader conversation about whether this is the greatest team of all time. And we're not too far away from maybe having to ask that question.
I think the question can be asked. I don't feel comfortable necessarily putting that answer out there. But you know what? I think, you know, as time passes and we get further away from this side, I think we'll have better understanding of where they actually slot in. But yeah, they're up there. First of all, they're the first team to ever win back-to-back in the Champions League. And the Champions League is the most premier competition in club football. You know, sorry, Club World Cup.
Yeah, and they've also kind of – because they won the first five, and I think they won another one within the first – let's say they won six of the first 10, that kind of loaded up the numbers when you talk about the teams that have won the European Cup / Champions League the most times. But now, if they win that 13th, I think it would be this year, you take away the first five, and they're still one ahead of the next closest club, AC Milan. So I think that speaks to their greatness, especially recently.
What would we call that? La Trace Decima? Do we have a word for that?
I don't know. We'd have to look.
I think they just call it domination.
Yeah.
All right. So you know what? Let me do a rundown of all the scores, and we. You know what we'll do is I'll leave it to you guys to decide what games you guys want to talk about, or what really struck you about this match day. So going back to Tuesday when Real Madrid did beat Dortmund 3-1, we also had Besiktas, Ryan Babel sighting everybody, winning 2-0 over RB Leipzig.
My boys.
Yeah.
Zlatan Bolin.
You know, we're talking about Dortmund and Bayern. I don't think Leipzig is about to compete with either of those guys.
It doesn't seem like it.
No. And then we had Monaco finally falling. It seems like it finally caught up to them. Porto came out 3-0 on Monaco. It was pretty one-sided. Speaking of one-sided, Manchester City over Shakhtar Donetsk. Well, the second half was one-sided. The first half was actually really competitive. Shakhtar is a good team, obviously. Kevin De Bruyne with one of those worldy goals from distance, just pelting a ball that keeper had no chance with, top right corner. It's a beauty. Go check it out. 3-0 Sevilla over Maribor, as expected. Spartak Moscow and Liverpool 1-1. Liverpool doing what Liverpool does.
Giving up as many goals as they score. Bada boom.
It's heavy metal football, everybody.
Is that what that means?
Yeah. And then also the final match I will mention from Tuesday's action, Napoli 3-1 over Feyenoord. Some say Feyenoord. I prefer to say it how it's spelled. It's wrong, but I'm really just trying to upset Leander, who may be listening. Dries Mertens has been phenomenal, but it was the usual for Napoli. Insigne scored.
Don't you mean Dries Mertens?
Stop. Well, it was the usual for Napoli. It was Insigne scored, Mertens scored, Callejon scored, Hamsik was involved, but really Mertens stood out above the crowd as he's done. All right, so moving on to Wednesday's action. Already mentioned, you know, actually we didn't mention, Manchester United 4-1 over CSKA Moscow. Juve 2-0 over Olympiacos. We already mentioned the PSG 3-0 over Bayern. And then Celtic with a 3-0 over Anderlecht. That was a bit of a surprise, but still, good stuff from Celtic. Good to see them performing in Europe. Barcelona with a pedestrian 1-0. It's a little bit surprising, actually, in a game that had a whole heck of a lot of yellow cards. It's the best way to explain that game. I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 bookings, I'm counting. And then the Roma 2-1 over Carabag, or I can never say that name right, but frankly, we won't hear about them much longer, so it doesn't really matter. And then the only match that, the other headlining match of the day, which was 2-1 Chelsea over Atletico Madrid. Atleti went up 1-0 early off a penalty kick by Antoine Griezmann. And then Chelsea leveled 1-1 until Michy Batshuayi in the 94th minute.
Big last, goal Batshuayi.
The last kick of the game.
The man who won the Premier League.
It is, the Bats, as some people call him. At the death, he scored. So from all those matches, what stood out to you guys? What do you guys want to talk about? I'm going to just open the floor to you guys.
I think in general, you got to at least say that you got to at least recognize the Premier League as a whole. I mean, we dog them a lot, and rightfully so, for the way that the teams have played in the Champions League in recent years. But, you know, United, City, Chelsea, Tottenham, all off to 2-0 starts. Liverpool has kind of struggled, but I think as a whole, the league is giving a good account of itself. And I'll tell you what, that result that Chelsea got at Atletico Madrid, I think you'd have to say it's the best result of the first couple rounds of the campaign. So I think the Premier League is giving a good account of itself. I also want to
just want to add in, it was Alvaro Morata who scored Chelsea's first goal, and he has been phenomenal.
He's been great.
Better than anyone would have expected. Everyone thought he was going to be pretty good, but way better than everybody expected. He's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say real quick, the Barcelona match, it was a little tricky. Sporting Lisbon is very difficult to break down when they don't. It's kind of like counterintuitive. When they don't park the bus, they're almost like more difficult to break down. And they gave Barcelona space to operate, but they haven't. I think they haven't lost yet this season. Sporting Lisbon in the league. Or in their first, you know, qualifying Champions League ties. And this is a club that we know over the years, a lot of the bigger clubs buy players from them, so they have
Cristiano
a very good
Ronaldo.
Development. Yes, exactly. They have a very good developmental system, and there's surely more prospects in this side. So kind of a tricky result for Barcelona. The goal that they got was a bit sloppy. I believe it was an own goal.
It was Coates with the own goal.
Yeah, you're not going to always have your best night and have your best effort, and Barcelona still won. So I think that's a good sign for them.
Can we talk about Harry Kane and a perfect hat trick?
Old Harry Kane.
He did. You know, regular listeners will know that Joey and I are Arsenal fans and don't like to give out compliments to anything Tottenham related.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, let's wrap this up.
Yeah. But barring the fact that he's probably not going to win trophies at his current club.
No.
Wow.
What separates Harry Kane? Is he now at the echelon of player that is right below Ronaldo, Messi? How far is he from that next tier of I don't know who you want to put there.
Before you answer that, Joey, just I did forget to mention Tottenham. It was 3-0 over Apoel.
And I know it's against Apoel. It's a Cypriot team, but still, Great performance from Harry Kane. What we're seeing from him lately.
It was a perfect hat trick.
It was a perfect hat trick.
Right, left, and a header. So for the purist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How far off is he from that next tier, do you think? Or is he there?
I you know, it's tough to say he's off of it because when you look at it, he's winning the Premier League Golden Boot 2 years in a row over the likes of Sergio Aguero, who we would say isn't really far off from that level at all.
He's never made a best 11 for the Premier League, Sergio Aguero, by the way.
Well, because Harry Kane's been in there. I think it's, you know, it's such a strange thing because when you look at Harry Kane, he just doesn't look like he's a superhuman striker.
He's not fast.
Striker.
He's not really
exactly.
Pacey,
he's not that fast. You don't really attribute him to being very strong. He's not known for being powerful in the air. There's nothing about him where, you know, you compare him stand him next to Zlatan, and you don't see the same thing. You stand him next to Aguero, you're like, oh, you know, he's pacey. He's got those little skills. Kane just... He just is a pure striker. You know, people almost, because of the way he looks, expected him to be a one-year, one-hit wonder. And he just isn't. He's so much more than that because he is a wonderful football player. I think the way he looks almost works against him. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that the goals that he scores are just marvelous. He is a brilliant player. I struggle to put him in that same category. But I can't really find the right reasons for why I don't put him in that category.
Is it the lack of trophies, lack of winning anything beyond the, you know, personal individual honors?
I think it's difficult because in soccer, the conversation gets muddled a bit by the fact that the concentration of talent – we're kind of starting to see this a little bit in the NBA for different reasons. But the concentration of talent in soccer is really divided between, what, the same 8 to 10 clubs. And, I mean, like, for example, if you take Gareth Bale off of – Real Madrid and put him back on Tottenham, or even look at it what it was like before Real Madrid bought him, you know, you would say that Gareth Bale is on that second tier. Now I'm not sure how many people would say that he's on that second tier, but that's just because it's so easy to forget because he's playing alongside all these great players. The same thing is true at PSG and Barcelona and Bayern and all these other mega clubs. I would say that Harry Kane is probably if you say Messi and Ronaldo are on the first tier and you look at the entirety of the team, not just attacking players, the entirety of a soccer team, I think that second tier, honestly, is populated with players like Manuel Neuer, with Paul Pogba, maybe Mats Hummels when he was on his day, like some of the best defenders
Griezmann,
in the world.
You might.
Yeah,
Sergio Ramos
is right there. And then I think right down there, you know, you've got Harry Kane behind them, maybe in that third tier. But, you know, if you're talking about – he is – you know, let's say this. If you say Ronaldo and Messi in whatever order are the two best players in the world, I don't think you're going more than 15, maybe 20 max players before you get to Harry Kane. He's definitely up there.
I think it's difficult because, you know, trying to put these players on tiers is just so, so difficult in the sense that – you look at a guy like Alvaro Morata, who couldn't get a game at Real Madrid, was in and out of the lineups at Juventus. He comes to Chelsea, and frankly, he could end up being Premier League top scorer. So is he on the next tier? Yeah. Is he above Harry Kane? Is he below? Like, it's tough because for all intents and purposes, he is he is the best like-for-like example of Harry Kane. He's not particularly fast, even though he scored all those headers. He's not some like superhuman Goliath in the air or anything. His body type is very similar. They can be successful because they have the skill, and that's the thing with Harry Kane that we don't necessarily attribute skill to English players in the same way. But he is a skillful striker, and the thing with Harry is, in particular, if you notice, when he's in the box, he always knows where the goal is. And he's always looking to get that shot off and find that little bit of space. A lot of times it's just a quick turn and shoot, and he scores. Like if you take those shots and you don't score, then it's a whole different matter. But he is doing everything asked of him or asked of any striker to do. And I don't think, you know, in a lot of other teams, or if he had pace, you'd probably stick him on the wing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But because he doesn't have that, he is just a pure number nine. And there's nothing at all wrong with being a pure number nine. You know, it's kind of one of those things where we've got so much skill and all this extra technical ability in the game now, where the number nines, you know, Rashford's a great example, just get pushed to the outside because they can do other stuff. But Harry Kane, no, all he does is he's a good, really, really, really good striker.
Yeah, two more things. I didn't mention Neymar. I don't want anyone to think I don't think Neymar is on that second tier as well. So,
well, he's on his own tier.
He's kind of on his own. Yeah.
He's kind of the one guy. I think who's
it's like, a 1A. Right, you know,
yeah.
It's that one, because like I said a little bit ago, and I'll let you get to your second point. I said a little bit ago, actually, on this podcast, was that I really do believe that Neymar, if he's able to take PSG to the Champions League final and win it, you're looking at him becoming Ballon d'Or in 1 year. And, you know, it usually World Cup year is reserved for a World Cup winner. Let's see what ends up happening in Russia. But for what he needed to do or wanted to do, if Barcelona had gone on and won with Neymar on the team, they won the Champions League, he's not on as the Ballon d'Or. He's going to finish third in voting once again. Now at PSG, he has the ability to take it in 1 year. And the way we saw him play and the way he's been playing, no one would argue against you at all, saying he's not doesn't deserve to be up there.
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk when he first got to France that maybe he was just too good for French football, but he pretty much did the same thing he's been doing week in and week out against Bayern Munich.
He did this in Brazil too before he came. You know, he did it in Spain. He did it in Brazil. He's done it in France. He does it in Europe. Like he did this against PSG in the Champions League last year. That's how they did the comeback. It was Neymar's comeback. It wasn't Messi's comeback.
He led it.
He completely led. So, I mean, he's just, for me, he's always just been a special talent. And I think that's the thing, is that when you see guys that are special talents like Neymar or Messi or Ronaldo, it's just so apparent. With Harry Kane, it's more subtle, because it's a lot of skill mixed in, but a lot of it's just instinct, but it's not flashy. And the flash is what Messi, Neymar, and Ronaldo really have. And Harry Kane just isn't flashy.
Yeah, and I think that to wrap it up, like I think that the other point I was going to make is situation is very important for looking your best. I think that the top tier, what separates them, you stick Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar on any given team, and I'm sorry, you're playing through them. You know, you're building around them. A guy like Romelu Lukaku, I feel like, is a good example here. Would he hold up as well in other leagues with, you know, he's good in tight spaces, he's very physical, you know, he's got a good nose around goal. And, you know, I'm certainly not trying to say he's not skilled or anything like that, but his game is more suited for the Premier League. So if he shows up on this list, I feel like he'd be higher because he's in an ideal situation than he would, say, in La Liga, where it's much more open and it's much faster paced. So I think that factors in as well.
Well, I think CSKA would say he belongs on that list after he scored twice.
He belongs in the Russian Premier League. We can say that.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then what we're going to do is we're going to come back and we're going to wrap up with a little bit of weekend Premier League talk. Excuse me. We'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but Energy Drinks.
It's my beer.
And we are back. Unfortunately, Alex Baker had to take off. Just emergency phone call came in.
He had to go protest Harry Kane in Tottenham or something. I don't know.
I don't know what's going on with him. But luckily, we have Leander Sherlackins joining us via phone somewhere in upstate New York. How you doing, Leander?
I'm actually taking a knee as I'm talking, but because it's a podcast, you can't tell.
So we are going to get into the weekend, and as much as there's a full fixture list of games, there's only one game we are interested in talking about, and that's Manchester City versus Chelsea. In many ways, the favorites from this year, Manchester City versus the champions from last year. And just to set it up, last year, Man City and Man United got off to fast starts. Chelsea did okay, and then all of a sudden went on this crazy winning streak and just ran away with the league. Similarly, Man City and Man United have gotten off to great starts. Chelsea's just a little bit behind, but they're definitely within striking distance, and this could just be another case of deja vu. That said, this match is arguably, no, I wouldn't even argue. I'd say is the biggest match of the season thus far. What are you expecting from this match, Leander?
Thus far, I absolutely agree with you. I'm really curious about this because on the one hand, we can see really what these teams are made of, and if that high-octane City offense, how that's going to do against the Chelsea defense. That's been robust, you know, not just last year, but, you know, consistently over the last decade. I think Chelsea's had one of the stronger defenses around. So I'm interested in that. But I think also that, in a way, even though this is by far the most attractive game of the weekend, that we sort of have to also keep in mind how early it is in the season, and that what happens around this time of the year, as you just alluded to, tends not to matter a huge amount in the long run, because so long as you sort of stay close to the pack, it's okay if at this time of year, you know, September, October, even November, you're not at the top and you're a few points off the pace, you know, so long as it's no more than like a half dozen. Because what really matters is how you deal with the fixture congestion around Christmas and then in the spring, when those really big games sort of come thick and fast. And the points that you spill at that time of year tend to be crucial. So while this game is hugely appetizing and it's going to be really interesting, and I think we're going to learn a lot, I don't know how many title consequences it's going to necessarily have.
Yeah, I think if you look, you know, the last couple of years, Arsenal's had big victories in October, 3-0 against Chelsea last year. I think the same scoreline against United the year before, and it hasn't really translated into much. And if Chelsea does lose this match and they do drop all 3 points, then they're 6 behind City, which is not ideal necessarily, but I would argue, as Leander would, that 6-point gap is not as damaging for Chelsea as, say, the 6 or 7 point gap Real Madrid has right now, falling off the pace behind Barcelona. And even that's not the end of the world. So, yeah, I agree that there's not going to be a lot of title implications. I just think it's going to be a fascinatingly played match. I mean, both sides are – these are pretty much two of the three teams that everyone thinks can win the league this year, United being the other one. And I think that it's, if you're City and you've been tearing teams apart – with that vicious attack, and you know, I think they also lead the league in least shots allowed. So, you know, the defense is no slouch either. And I think if they look at how Arsenal lined up and went at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge a couple weeks back, they've got to be saying to themselves, why can't we do the exact same thing, and why can't we have success? And that's where the other matchup Leander talked about kind of comes into play, with Chelsea having a staunch defense, City having arguably the best attack in the Premier League. It's going to be fascinating. I think City's going to have more of the possession, but Antonio Conte drills his team very well. They know how to win matches like this. So it's just it's going to be sumptuous for the fans to watch more than anything. And you know, people are going to take from it what they will in terms of, like, title implications. And I agree, again, that's a little silly. I think it's just going to be a fantastic match between two of the best teams in the league, if not Europe.
Now this match takes place at Stamford Bridge, which is worth mentioning because Chelsea should come in as favorites. Was this, if this were to be played on neutral ground, Leander, who do you think should be the favorite?
If it were on neutral ground, I'd say City's the favorite. I mean, they've just been absolutely rampant. That said, this time last year, they were absolutely rampant as well, and then they faded, as we've sort of been alluding to. I even recall sort of around this time last year, somebody asking Pep Guardiola in a press conference if they could do the quadruple, and he responded by saying, what the, and then there was a word that we can't put in a family podcast, because he was so appalled by this notion. So again, that is how early it is in the season. But at the same time, sort of with the rumblings that we've been hearing out of West London with Antonio Conte, you know, not being entirely happy with the summer dealings, and maybe some players sort of growing a little fed up with him because he's a famously demanding manager. He's also a manager who can sort of quit a job in a huff. And there's, you know, we've picked up these little rumors here and there, these little trifling, niggling little things. So I kind of wonder if they lose again at home, and if they lose sort of resoundingly, if that could put Chelsea in a little bit of a tailspin, akin to what we saw 2 years ago under Jose Mourinho, where all of a sudden, you know, a loss that probably in the grand scheme of things isn't going to be that big as it relates to sort of the final standings could have a really, really big echo on the dynamics within the club and sort of set the tone for where this team is going to go the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a statement game more than it is necessarily a match that's going to decide the league, because it's way too early to say any match is going to decide the league. But there is a statement to be made here from Manchester City as much as there is from Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea right now looks like they're really settling into Alvaro Morata, finding his stride, and they've kind of gotten past the Diego Costa mess up, we'll call it, over the summer. Costa's moved on to Atletico Madrid now, and that's all done and parceled. But I feel like Chelsea right now, a win over Manchester City would mean so much to this season, this club. And all of a sudden, if they were to beat Manchester City, right, they're level on points with them. Even if Manchester United beat Crystal Palace, which we all think will happen, and you're trailing Man U by 3 points, all of a sudden, you've kind of broken down, you know, one half of the runaway leaders, so if you will. So I think that it is a statement game early in the season, and I would not bet against Manchester City, but I also wouldn't bet against Chelsea because I think that these two teams are by far two of the best three teams in the league. Joey, what are you expecting from this match, and where do you fall in terms of which team do you think has the edge?
I think City has the edge because I think they're the better side, and I would argue that they're still favorites even going into Stamford Bridge. However, that doesn't mean Chelsea is going to be very easy to break down. And I think that if you know, we talk about what the implications would be for Chelsea. For City's side, you know, Leander mentioned how they went on that great run of unbeaten form last year early in the season. And then, you know, obviously that kind of dovetailed a little bit, and they still had a good season, but they didn't really seriously contend for the title. This season, I feel like a loss to Chelsea in this spot would kind of maybe, at least if only for a second, make them think, you know, is this sort of like last season where we were very good to start, but it might be a little bit bumpier of a road than we think it would be. And to go along with that, we talked, you know, the last segment about, especially in the PSG-Bayern match, like that's kind of the first test, so to speak, the big test that those clubs have faced this season. This kind of feels like, you know, all due respect to Liverpool, the Mane red card kind of changed things in that game. So this is kind of like the first big test that City has. And if they pass it, then that's great for them. But again, if they don't, then it's going to maybe produce some more questions than they feel comfortable answering at this point.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say, and I'll ask Leander about this, is just kind of to expand on that. You know, last year, City did have that strong start, but Pep never really seemingly believed the team was close to ready. And he was right. They were not. But over the summer, they've addressed a lot of those points. The team's gotten younger. They've definitely addressed their fullbacks. They've spent enough money. Where would be the deficiency in terms of City? Is it just simply as clear as just saying, hey, this team still doesn't have the experience to push on, and they need just time? Or is it a matter of, no, this team is significantly better than they were, and they're more prepared, and Pep's more prepared? Do you think that this City team should be considered the favorite, not just for this match, but for the league?
I think that the dirty little secret of winning the Premier League is that you don't win the title when you're playing in your games against the other big teams. I mean, that's just the truth. I actually broke this down for FC Yahoo towards the end of last season, where the way the math works is that if you more or less split your games with the other big teams, as teams are wont to do, because these big games, they tend to come out more or less evenly, unless you're Arsenal. Sorry, Joey. You know, it comes down to your efficiency against the, you know, the 14 other teams or 13 or however you want to count it. And where City lost the title wasn't necessarily in its big games against the other big teams. Where Chelsea won the title was that even though it split its games with the other big teams, it was insanely efficient against everybody else. I think if you look at the teams like outside the top six, going into the last few rounds of the season, they'd only spilled like 4 points or something like that. It was ridiculous. And that's where City, I think, fell short. They were fine for the most part in the big games, but against the smaller teams, you know, that spill 2 points here, maybe get upset there. So they have addressed a lot of deficiencies, which I think will make them, if anything, more durable. And I think with them, it was a depth problem as much as anything else, because, you know, Fernandinho was suspended for a while, and then they had to draft Yaya Toure back in, which actually wound up working out. But there was a lack of depth there that really hurt them, I think, when they weren't playing against the bigger teams, and they sort of had to cycle through players a little bit. So I think just by addressing the depth with quality players, they're going to be better equipped for that. I mean, it's not going to be a way to Chelsea that they win or lose the title. It's going to be in their two games against Stoke, in their two games against Burnley, in their two games against whoever. That's where it's going to be decided if they have enough points to pull it off. So I think in that regard, They've improved themselves and they've given themselves the tools. But of course, the way the arms race in the Premier League has been, everybody has gotten deeper. Everybody has sort of stopped, maybe with the possible exception of Chelsea, who've done a lot of like-for-like swaps in the transfer market. But just about everybody has put new pieces together. So the question is, who's the deepest?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, your point is well taken. Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool under Klopp, you know, they've been fantastic against the other top five, top six sides, whatever you want to call it. The 5-0 loss to City, notwithstanding a couple weeks ago. But they've just dropped so many points against the other teams that they don't really seriously contend. And I keep making this point on the pod, and I'll make it again. The important stat last year, you could argue the most important stat, was that where other teams were losing games, Chelsea was drawing them. They only lost three games all last season. And I don't think they might have had the most wins in the league. I'm not sure that they did. But they had a ton of draws. And it's like you don't lose a ton of points to those other teams. And that kind of is what keeps you there. As long as you don't drop all 3 points, as long as you get a result on a consistent basis, yeah, that's going to mean more than a big match purportedly will. That said, this one on Saturday should be insanely entertaining.
All right, guys, I think that's all the time we have. So thanks, Leander, for joining us via phone. It was not Skype. I will not give them a shout out. Joey, as always. also, Alex, who is no longer here. Thank you, Alex Baker, for joining us. And this has been Shahan Ahmed with the FC Yahoo podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at FC Yahoo. Like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/FC Yahoo, all one word. And review our podcast if you're listening. We appreciate any and all feedback. All right, everybody, have a good day. Bye.